Hooly-ho, Neighborinos, and welcome into the Week 7 edition of Sunday Best. I'm your host, Jay Felicio, and can you believe we're over halfway through the regular season for fantasy football? It's hard to believe we spend all this time in the offseason and it goes by so fast, but that's here nor there. First off, I want to say thank you for listening, and whether it's your first time or you've listened to every single episode, I truly appreciate it. This show is a sort of quick-hitting podcast reacting to the happenings of Sunday games. I'm not going to hit every game, I'm not going to hit every player, but I'm going to hit the most impactful storylines, Sunday's best performances, and a few of the worst. Now, I'm going to change the format just a little bit. Previously, I'd focused more on three games and then hit quick hitters. While I like that format, it didn't really hit the essence of what I was trying to get with this podcast. So I'm going to scrap the three games format and pretty much what I was doing with the quick hitters. That's what the majority of the show is going to be. I feel like it's a way for me to hit more games, more of the big storylines, and still deliver it all in 20 minutes or less or your money back. And a very special rest in peace to the muscle hamster himself, Doug Martin. Roll up the tape because the London Turf got absolutely torched by a couple of seasoned vets. We're breaking down the ridiculously efficient day of Matthew Stafford and Devontae Adams against the Jaguars. Stafford didn't post video game numbers, but he delivered a clinic in surgical precision. He completed 21 of 33 passes for a meager 182 passing yards, but somehow still racked up 5 touchdowns. This was pure red zone voodoo, providing you don't need volume, you just need perfection. He set the single game international record with those 5 passing touchdowns, and he did it while saying, "No Puka, no problem." Then there's his veteran wingman for the day, Devontae Adams, turned in an otherwise pedestrian performance with 5 catches on 8 targets for 35 yards, but he turned it into a fantasy nuclear blast, catching 3 touchdowns. Adams is playing with prime level red zone dominance, and even with Nacua expected back after the bye, he's a borderline wide receiver one. As for Stafford, he's in a phenomenal groove, riding the wave of 12 touchdowns and 0 interceptions over his last 4 games. He'll be a quarterback one facing off against the Saints in Week 9. File that under must-start territory. The Jaguars gave Travis Hunter the keys to the kingdom, and he answered the bell. 8 receptions on 14 targets for 101 yards and his first career touchdown. It's a monster line that generated 21.4 fantasy points, more than his last 3 games combined. He shattered his own career highs and proved that the ceiling is actually real. Hunter did it in a variety of ways, slicing through the defense on screens, hauling in tough catches over the middle, and then running a perfect post route to absolutely torch the defensive back for the score, leaving the safety in the dust as he enters the end zone. While we don't love seeing Brian Thomas Jr. leave with an injury, he was clearly hurting most of this game, and hopefully this massive involvement from Hunter has to be a sign of things to come when the Jaguars come back from their bye. You still can't trust him as anything more than a wide receiver 3 right now, but this performance is a shot of adrenaline that makes his upside undeniable. Now it's time to talk about the man who single-handedly dragged the Browns offense, kicking and screaming out of the darkness and into the promised land of fantasy relevance. We're talking about Quinshon Judkins versus the Dolphins, and this was a statement game. Judkins crushed Miami to the tune of 25 carries for 84 yards and 3 touchdowns. He had a ridiculous 46-yard touchdown run where he blasted through the hole with pure, unadulterated explosiveness, forcing a missed tackle from safety Minkah Fitzpatrick before taking it to the house. He was deployed in the wildcat formation for his final 2 scores and prevented a little bit of chaos as well. He had a mishandled snap on the first wildcard touchdown, but that couldn't stop him. He recovered, hit the spin button, and willed his way into the end zone. Judkins joined Nick Chubb and Jerome Harrison as only the 3rd running back in franchise history to log a 3 touchdown rushing game. So here's the cold, hard, non-negotiable truth. Judkins is the Browns' entire offense. You cannot fade this man. You cannot fade this volume. You cannot fade this talent. Judkins is now a borderline running back one for the rest of the season. End of discussion. What we saw in Cleveland was an unmitigated disaster fueled by the catastrophic play of quarterback Tua Tagovailoa, which dragged down his top target, pretty much his only target, Jalen Waddle. Stat line for Tua looks like a typo, honestly. 12 completions on 23 attempts for 100 yards and 0 touchdowns. 3 interceptions, that's right. His 2nd game in a row with 3 picks. They were inexcusable, back-breaking mistakes with 2 terrible, panic decisions by Tua. And the 3rd, although it was a tipped pass, it was an overthrow to Devon Achane that was basically gift-wrapped to the defender. To make things worse, he fumbled 3 times, but miraculously didn't lose any of them. The team still outgained Cleveland 219 yards to 206, yet could only muster two field goals. The offensive incompetence led to Tua being benched for Quinn Ewers in the fourth quarter. Jalen Waddle was collateral damage, registering his worst game of the season with just four targets, one reception, and 15 yards, and none of it was his fault. This is the horror show of a top wideout tethered to a collapsing quarterback. Tua Tagovailoa should be benched in all fantasy formats until further notice, and a real-life benching may be headed his way pretty soon. Waddle remains a low-end wide receiver too because he's the lone remaining pass-catching option on a team that's going to be playing from behind consistently, but his targets could be coming from the rookie Quinn Ewers before long. Jalen Hurts, Devonta Smith, and A.J. Brown absolutely demolished the Vikings secondary. Hurts finished the day with an impeccable 19 completions on 23 attempts for 326 yards, three touchdowns, and zero interceptions. That statistical purity earned him a perfect 158.3 passer rating, a feat only achieved three times in Eagles history. Hurts had his first 300-plus passing yard game since week three of last season, demonstrating that the Eagles are being aggressive through the air for the third straight game. They came out swinging, connecting on a fourth down, 37-yard touchdown to A.J. Brown on the opening drive. He may have finished with four carries for negative 10 yards, but honestly, who cares? His two deep touchdown strikes brings him to four on the season, tied with Matthew Stafford and Drake May for second, only behind Baker Mayfield, who has seven. The receivers were just as lethal. Devonta Smith secured nine receptions on nine targets for a massive 183 yards and a touchdown, blowing by the entire defense as Hurts hit him in stride for a 79-yard touchdown pass. Meanwhile, A.J. Brown was hyper-efficient, turning four targets into four receptions for 121 yards and two touchdowns. They were just unstoppable. Hurts was always a quarterback one, but a performance like this gives genuine hope for a top three finish at the position. A.J. Brown is a high-end wide receiver two and Smith a high-end wide receiver three. Both could easily jump a tier if the Eagles maintain this increased pass volume from here on out. The two Vikings wide receivers served up a high volume but contrasting plate against the Eagles. We saw Jordan Addison go absolutely bonkers while Justin Jefferson ate a more modest meal. Addison was treated like the alpha this week, leading the team in 12 targets, which he converted for 9 receptions, 128 yards, though he failed to score a touchdown. Season high in targets, receptions, yardage, generating 21.8 fantasy points and continuing his very solid pace, averaging over 17 points per game since coming back from his suspension. He was finding soft spots in the coverage all day and running through traffic like a getaway driver. As for Justin Jefferson, it was a disappointing day from a fantasy perspective, but the usage is the only stat that matters, turning 10 targets into 5 receptions and 79 yards. This was his third straight game with 10-plus targets, confirming his elite role despite the meager stat line. Addison is a rock-solid wide receiver, too, who can match the ceiling of nearly anybody in the league. Justin Jefferson remains among the top three of the position despite the quiet scoring. Both of them get the Chargers on Thursday Night Football, a Chargers defense that was just torched by Indiana Jones, which sets up both receivers for a massive game to start the week. We've got a tale of two backs in New England, and one of them just got officially flushed down the waiver wire. We're talking Ramondre Stevenson and the ghost of rookie hype, Travion Henderson, against the Titans. Stevenson was a grinder, churning out 88 yards on 18 carries and adding three catches for 17 yards on four targets, and he punched in a touchdown. Over the last 2 weeks, Stevenson has an iron grip on the job, taking 77% of snaps, about 60% of the carries, and a non-negotiable 100% of the snaps inside the 5-yard line. Now for the other side of the ledger, rookie Travion Henderson logged a pitiful 14% of snaps, barely touching the ball, finishing with just two carries, 5 yards. And just to rub a little salt in there, undrafted free agent Terrell Jennings had more carries than Henderson. I've held out as long as I could, folks, but it's finally Jover for Trey Henderson. Henderson's a droppable stash in redrafts. I mean, I wouldn't force it, but I wouldn't blame you either. Ramondre Stevenson is a solid RB2 with a nice floor because the volume and goal line dominance are pretty much locked in. For some odd reason, he's the apple of Mike Vrabel's eye. Look, Kamani Vidal's primary stat line of 9 carries for 20 yards plus 4 receptions for 15 yards are what the youth would call disappointing. Don't get me wrong, it's certainly not a great stat line for a guy who was the hottest waiver claim of the week. This game script was a mollywhopping by the Colts, turning the Chargers' offensive plan into a tire fire, which means we have to pivot. And the usage data is a silver lining pulled directly from the abyss. Vidal commanded a 65% snap share, handled 9 of 10 running back carries, earned 5 targets to Hassan Haskins too. He's the clear bell cow, I guess you could say, even if the results were kind of ugly with 7.5 fantasy points. The volume seems locked in, you just have to pray for a better game script. Trey McBride posted a phenomenal stat line against the Packers. 13 targets led to 10 receptions for 74 yards and 2 touchdowns. And no, that wasn't a mistake. 2 touchdowns for Trey McBride. And here's a little bit of a statistical truth bomb for you. McBride had 2 receiving touchdowns in his full 2024 season with Kyler Murray at the helm. In just 2 games with Jacoby Brissett throwing the ball, he's already racked up 3 receiving touchdowns. McBride is locked into the tight end one conversation with or without Kyler Murray due to his guaranteed volume, but it's going to be incredibly interesting to see if Murray continues to shortchange McBride in the touchdown department when he returns after the Cardinals bye. Dak was unstoppable, throwing 21 completions on 30 attempts for 264 yards, 3 touchdowns, and no interceptions. Forget the measly 5 carries for 7 yards, this man is dealing, riding on an unreal tear, 14 touchdowns over his last 4 games. Prescott hit a season-high 130.4 passer rating and is proving why you shouldn't fade veterans with elite weapons. He's basically a cheat code right now. The tight end Jake Ferguson was pure fantasy gold, turning a meager 3 targets, 3 receptions for 33 yards into 2 touchdowns. Ferguson's red zone work has been absurd. He now has 6 touchdowns on the season in 7 games, compared to 7 touchdowns across his entire 22, 23, and 24 seasons. CeeDee Lamb came back like he never left, racking up 5 receptions on 8 targets for 110 yards and a touchdown. Meanwhile, George Pickens still got plenty of action, even with the return of his wide receiver 1, grabbing 4 receptions on 6 targets for 82 yards. Prescott has a tough matchup against the Broncos next week, but Dak's locked and loaded as a must-start in all formats. Lamb slots right back into his top 3 to top 5 fantasy receiver status, and Pickens is a highly volatile wide receiver 2 who still has weak winning potential, but his floor is certainly lower with the return of Lamb. Fergalicious is currently the tight end 1 and remains a must-start in all formats. Patrick Mahomes is on a Thanos-like tour of destruction, and the Raiders were simply the next planet to be wiped clean. Mahomes was surgical, completing 26 of 35 passes, 286 yards, and 3 touchdowns, adding 4 carries for 28 yards for good measure. He was in full Thanos mode, snapping his fingers and erasing the Raiders' defense. He is the only quarterback since 2000 to post 200 passing yards and 3 passing touchdowns on the first 3 drives of a game. The Chiefs were up 31-0 so fast that the starters were pulled before the end of the third quarter, robbing Mahomes of an easy 400-yard day. And an absolute masterclass in acting. On a critical fourth down, he tricked the defense, making them think that he was bluffing the hard count, saying, "This never works. Only to snap the ball and get the first down." It was absolutely brilliant. The receiving group ate like it was a Thanksgiving buffet. Rashee Rice exploded back into the lineup with 7 receptions on 7 targets, 42 yards and 2 tutties, showing that there is zero rust on this man. Do not doubt a pissed off Patrick Mahomes. He's the QB1 for fantasy on the season so far and should finish inside the top 5 with relative ease. Rashee Rice is locked in with wide receiver 1. Xavier Worthy and Marquise Brown remain highly volatile, with Worthy being more of a wide receiver 2 and Brown more of a wide receiver 3. Bill Kroski-Merritt got the lion's share of the backfield work against the Cowboys, which is the main reason we care. 13 carries for 33 yards, but more importantly, he got a robust receiving line of 6 receptions on 8 targets and 61 yards. He seems to take the mantle of primary RB1 for this offense by sheer involvement, but the fantasy gold was quickly diluted by 2 vultures. Jeremy McNichols was involved in the passing game, 3 targets that turned into 2 catches for 23 yards, and chipped in 2 carries for 22 yards. But the backbreaker, Chris Rodriguez, only got 3 carries for 12 yards, but the lone touchdown of the group. It's a classic case of too many cooks spoiling the fantasy broth. JCM can be considered a low-end RB2 because of the passing down work and the overall opportunity share are his to lose, but the involvement of McNichols and Rodriguez, especially Rodriguez's propensity for the end zone, is a massive cap on his upside. Jackson Dart just played the role of scrappy underdog who refused to lose, even if the scoreboard ultimately disagreed. This kid put on a show against the Broncos. Dart finished with a monster fantasy day, 15 completions on 33 attempts for 283 yards, 3 touchdowns and 1 interception, adding another score on the ground with 5 carries for 11 yards and 1 rushing touchdown. That's 4 total scores for the rookie who is dealing with arguably the worst receiving corps in the league. He did everything he could to will the Giants to a W, including the Michael Jordan Space Jam-like stretch to the end zone to give the Giants the lead late in the game. It was a spectacular play that showed off his dual threat talent. It is slightly depressing to think about what he could have done with a healthy Malik Nabers, but Dart's rushing floor is so high that he's become a fantasy points machine. He now has multiple touchdowns in every single start since taking over the job. Dart is startable in all fantasy formats because he offers both a high floor from his rushing and a high ceiling from his gunslinger mentality. We just witnessed one of the most absurd comebacks in league history, and Bo Nix was the main conductor of the Mile High Magic. Nix's final line was a stunning fantasy eruption in the fourth quarter, 5 carries for 48 yards and 2 rushing touchdowns. That's 4 total scores for a guy who was basically missing for 3 quarters. The Broncos were down 19-0 and scored an unbelievable 33 points in the fourth quarter alone. That is the most fourth quarter points by any team shut out in the first 3 quarters in NFL history. The comeback was straight out of a corny 80s sports movie where the underdog team gets a halftime motivational speech from a sensei. However, we do have to talk about the 50 attempts. It's scary that he couldn't surpass 300 passing yards on that kind of volume. Nix is a starter more often than not because his rushing upside and goal line utility are simply too high to bench. But you have to accept the reality he's going to be up and down all season. You're trading efficiency for pure chaotic scoring opportunity. As for the injuries, there were a lot of pretty impactful ones. Jayden Daniels exited the Commanders' Week 7 loss to the Cowboys early with a hamstring injury and is on tap for an MRI on Monday, leaving the exciting dual threat production in a... Don't know what's going to happen here, but I would not be surprised to see him miss... Jayden Daniels exited the Commanders' Week 7 loss to the Cowboys early with a hamstring injury and is set for an MRI on Monday. Bryce Young was ruled out for the Panthers' Week 7 game against the Jets due to a late ankle injury, which puts his already quarterback. Brian Thomas Jr. suffered a late-game shoulder injury from the Jaguars' Week 7 blowout loss. Brian Thomas Jr. suffered a late-game shoulder injury in the Jaguars' Week 7 blowout loss, but fantasy managers should be thankful that he has a Week 8 bye to get right. Despite a lingering ankle injury, Dontayvion Wicks was officially active for the Packers' Week 7 game. Darren Waller was ruled out Week 7 with a pec strain and faces an MRI on Monday, which the results will determine if the potentially season-ending injury crashes into... Which results will... Darren Waller was ruled out of Week 7 with a pec strain and faces an MRI on an injury that could potentially end his revival. Darren Waller was ruled out for Week 7 with a pec strain and faces an MRI on Monday, the results of which will determine if it's a potentially season-ending injury or not. Kendre Miller was ruled out in the second quarter of the Saints' Week 7 matchup with a knee injury, instantly turning Alvin Kamara's volume into an absolute goldmine. And that's it for Week 7 of Sunday Best. I appreciate you taking out the time of your busy schedules to take a listen to me talk about a game. I hope you like the new format. I'll be back next week for the Week 8 edition of Sunday Best. Same bat time, same bat channel. And remember, choose love, not hate.